Hi, everybody. Good afternoon, and welcome to this presentation on Xamarin and cross-platform development. My name is Erwin van der Valk. I'm the CTO of a company called iReckon, which is in Amsterdam. And a while ago, my company was asked to start building some mobile applications. And at the time, I didn't really know that much about mobile applications, so I dove into it and did quite a lot of investigation on, okay, what are the options, what are the best practices, and those kind of things. And it's effectively those things that I'd like to share with you. I hope, just to get your expectations a bit online, we're not going to go into too much code here, and we're not going to do too much programming. For one reason, or for a couple reasons, actually, there's just a lot of depth in every platform to go into. So as soon as you start describing too much about the coding styles and the coding principles, it's just each platform is a world upon itself. And second, I didn't bring a Mac, so that also kind of makes it a little bit more difficult to go into the real cross-platform development, because obviously you might need a Mac for that. But I am going to talk about, okay, well, what are the reasons to choose a particular way of developing? What are the options that you have, and how to approach certain challenges that you might get into? This is one of the slides that the organization would like me to show. Please fill out your evaluations. It's also very good for us presenters to know, okay, well, how are we doing? And apparently you can win some prizes as well, so that's really nice. This is my agenda for today. I'd like to talk a little bit about the mobile market space, just to introduce a little bit what we're going to be talking about. Then I'm going to introduce Xamarin to you, for those of you who might not know it. Who has used Xamarin before in this crowd? Okay, quite a couple of hands already. I hope I'm going into enough depth for you then in this presentation, because it's going to be a little bit of an overview, but well, we'll see. I'm going to introduce Xamarin iOS and Xamarin Android. Lastly, we're going to talk about, okay, well, what should you do to design a proper cross-platform application? First of all, I'd like to start off with a little slide here. I read this online, and I figured, well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I use a Windows Phone. I actually like it a lot better than my wife's iPhone, for example, or the Android phone I had before this. Some of the claims, it's fastest growing OS. Well, fastest growing doesn't really say that much. I don't know if you know XKCD. If you have only a couple devices and you double that amount, you grow by 100%. It doesn't really say that much. Because if you look at the mobile market space right now, unfortunately, Windows Phone is still quite small. iOS is much bigger, obviously. Android is much bigger. If you look at sales, by the way, sales and especially trends in those sales, iOS is still pretty high. The Android is gaining ground very rapidly. I mean, especially with cheaper Android devices, they're selling a lot. And it's difficult to see because Windows Phone is in the other bucket here, but Windows Phone sells around 3% of devices right now. So, I mean, it will gain ground, but it's still pretty small. Unfortunately, actually, because like I said, I really like the Windows Phone platform. But this kind of gives you an insight. Okay, well, if you start developing applications, what should you focus on? Should you start building just a Windows Phone application? Just because, I am assuming that most of you guys are .NET developers and you know things about .NET. But unfortunately, the reality is that it's still a very small platform. So one thing I really like to keep in mind is that if you look at the mobile market space and the applications that you can build on top of a mobile device, the range is really broad. A mobile application can be a game with 3D graphics and those kind of things. It can be a social application with lots of internet connectivity and lots of things. Or it can be more like a utility or a business application, which may or may not have that much internet connection needed. So we'll have to keep this in mind, that the range of applications that you can develop when you're starting to think about, okay, how can I build a cross-platform application? If you think about how can I build a cross-platform application, right now there's pretty much three approaches that you can take. You can go all native, and doesn't really mean singing around a campfire, but you can go native. You can go all the way building more of a web-style application, or you can kind of sit in the middle. Now, who of you know what a Babelfish is? couple hands. Oh, that's too bad. There's a movie or a book, actually, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the Babel fish was something that you plugged into your ear, and it would translate everything that you hear into something that you could understand. Well, that's kind of, you know, the Xamarin approach. So we'll get into that in a minute. But what does it mean, going native, right? If you really want to start developing applications, it kind of means that you will be coding in various different languages. In iOS, it will be Objective-C, and I'll show you a little bit about that. It will be either Java or C#. But the nice thing about taking this approach is that you will have the ultimate with regards to performance and flexibility, because you can really take advantage of every tiny little feature in the platform and code against that. One of the big downsides, obviously, is that you'll end up with a couple of completely different separate code bases without any reuse. Another downside for me and my company, and this might be very real to you if you want to look into cross-platform development, is there's a big learning curve for each of these languages, right? It's not just a platform that you'll have to learn and everything that the platform offers you, but it's also the languages itself that will make it, you know, difficult to get into. And yeah, we'll see a little bit about that in the next slide. If you go way to the other side of the spectrum, which is more like a web-based approach, the simplest form of this, actually, is you can just take a web application that might doesn't even have to store any state, and you can on iOS, for example, you can just put it as a startup as an icon on your machine, and you could even hide the controls for going back and forward, and it looks like an application. But most of the time, when people think about building applications, using web technologies, they're thinking about Cordova, or if you think about that was actually PhoneGap in the past, or App Builder from Telerik, which was Icinium in the before. It's nice that they keep changing the names, right? It's really makes things. And PhoneGap still exists, by the way, as a name, but it's now something completely different. So if you're thinking about this approach, the nice thing is that you can use one language, or the web languages, so to speak, like HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, to build your application. Well, if you know web development, you can get started right away. You'll only have one code base, and it will probably end up being one application that you just deploy to different stores. One of the downsides is, and I've heard actually something about this, and it kind of gives it a bit of an evil feel right now. That's the one ring to rule them all. Is that the mobile browsers in the mobile phones that we have are kind of varying in quality. Right? If you look at the latest iOS and the latest Windows Phone and the latest Android, by the way, they all have pretty good browsers. They have pretty good support for JavaScript, for HTML5, and whatever you might want to do with that. But if you start looking at slightly older versions of Android, their browsers are horrible. They have really lacking support for some of the basic things you might want to do. I've heard it compared to those browsers are worse than IE6. Now, you might think, well, they're older versions of Android, right? Who cares about older versions? We all have the latest version of everything. Unfortunately, some evil providers out there, especially in the US, they are still bringing out new phones with very old versions of Android. So there is a pretty big market for people buying phones today, relatively cheap phones, who think, this is a smartphone. It should be able to do anything you want. And they have really, really bad browsers on them. So if you start going down this route, for iOS, I'm pretty sure that you can get a lot of things to work. On Windows Phone, get pretty a lot of things to work. But when you start looking at older devices and supporting them, you'll be in a lot of trouble. Another thing which I've always heard, if you go this route, is that 80% of the things you might want to do is very easy, and the last 20% is going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Now, it really depends on the type of application that you're building. Remember in the past I showed you all kinds of things you might want to do? Building a game, depending on what kind of game it is. If it's simple trivia, it's not going to be that difficult, but I wouldn't do that much 3D rendering in a browser application. Building a simple utility, that might work. Building a line of business application where you don't really do that much with the platform features itself. Seems like a great approach, this. But if you're building, you know, a social application where you interact a lot with the contacts, with the devices, or if you have very strict layout requirements from your customer, I would kind of shy away from this approach right now. But my prediction is, and this is a bit odd, but my prediction is that, you know, the web platform is evolving so fast, and so much effort is being put into JavaScript and all kinds of utilities on top of JavaScript, that I can't imagine that this approach will still be as difficult as it is now in, you know, 4 years or 5 years' time. Now, you should never take, you know, recommendations from anybody on these things, like predictions, because nobody can predict the future. But I didn't expect, you know, 5 or 10 years ago that JavaScript would take such a big flight as it did now. So right now, if I'm going to bet on the near future, I would bet on web languages. But that said, if I were to build an application right now that needed to be cross-platform, I would go more of the Babelfish approach, and that's, you know, using Xamarin and using the Xamarin Studio ecosystem. Because the nice thing is, and that's probably why you're all here, is that with Xamarin Studio, you can code in one language, C#, for me, but, you know, all the .NET languages are available to you. I explicitly say here for logic, and we'll see why in the next couple of slides. But yeah, the logic is where you can build cross-platform, you know, reuse your code, so to speak. Oh well, there are three languages that you will still need to use for defining your user interface, and that's only if you target the, you know, the three largest. And that's actually the two largest and the one that's not very large. You know, iOS has its own way of defining user interfaces. Android has its own language for defining user interfaces. And yeah, there's just no way to get around that. Unless you're building a game and you only do 3D rendered graphics, right? I mean, if you really draw your own graphics, well, of course you can port that across to different platforms. And one really nice thing is that there's pretty much only one runtime. And we'll see in Android what I mean with pretty much. But basically, all the techniques that you know, if you're, I'm saying you know, how many people here are developing right now in .NET? Ah, fortunately, everybody, friends. Great. No, yeah. If you're developing in .NET right now, a lot of things which you know, like, you know, garbage collection, you know, the way that all the C# and .NET techniques that you're familiar with, you can use, and that's really nice. All right, so enough chit-chat about, you know, what kind of things, you know, what's the ecosystem like. Let's talk a little bit about Xamarin. Let me introduce it to you. So the origins of Xamarin Studio come from Mono and Monogame. I read that, you know, Mono and Monogame was originally started to be able to do, you know, .NET on Linux machines, for example. But also due to some, you know, purchase of the company who built Mono. But after a while, they kind of started focusing more on the mobile space. And they found out, well, you know, mobile platforms can also run Mono. So let's focus on that. And actually, that's now the main place where I think that Mono is being used right now. Because the nice thing is that you're coding in your familiar .NET languages, and it compiles to a native package. And it varies, of course, on how it does it, depending on which platform you're using. But yeah, that's how it works. One of the things which you'll need to take into account is the pricing model, because, you know, I'm kind of used to having an MSDN subscription. You know, all the Microsoft tooling is available for you because you have the subscription. And then if you want to start using this, you kind of start running, you know, there's quite some steep pricing that you'll have to take into account, especially if you want to do development in Visual Studio. And I'll explain in a minute what you can do there and how that works. But the business license is $1,000. It's actually dollars, right? It's not just 1,000 integers, but it's $1,000 per platform per developer. So if you want to build out an iOS application and an Android application, you'll have to pay $2,000 for the business edition. So I think that's quite a steep curve, especially if it's something that you don't do, you know, if it's not your core business, so to speak. If you just have one app that you want to cross develop and you want to do that with a couple of developers, then all of a sudden it's not cheap. But let me just show you quickly a little bit about Xamarin Studio, because one of the things that you'll get, especially if you use the the starter edition, which allows you to build relatively small apps, or the indie edition, you'll get Xamarin Studio. So you're not able to code in Visual Studio. You use the editor that's provided with the platform. So let me show you a little bit about what Xamarin Studio looks like. I'll have to do this. Duplicate screen. And yay, we can see the screen. It's not my optimal resolution, but I hope you can see it. So Xamarin Studio looks like this. If you're using Visual Studio, it's kind of familiar. I mean, the most things that you're used to, like, you know, a solution explorer is there, the toolbox, properties, document outline. You know, pretty much what you're familiar with is here. If you want to connect to version control, there are some features here. What I found is the best way to work with this, especially if you're doing cross-platform development, is to use Git. I'm used to working with Team Foundation Server, and you know, the latest versions of Team Foundation Server do have Git support. But if you start working, for example, in iOS, you don't have a choice. In iOS, you'll have to use Git or Subversion, or you can't use Team Foundation Server to connect to it. That's a bit unfortunate. But I've used this quite a lot, and it's actually not a bad editor, although I am kind of hooked on ReSharper. Who here uses ReSharper a lot? Right, a lot of people. I think it's the best thing ever since sliced bread. So if you're a fan of ReSharper, you'll probably want to start coding in Visual Studio. So let's look at slightly later what that might look like. But this was Xamarin Studio, and you know, there's not that much to see. It's an editor. You can compile. You can play with it. All right. Now, one of the things which I kind of like about Xamarin Studio is that it comes with a built-in gallery. Now, this gallery is kind of like NuGet, but also like a control library, and it does quite a lot of things. It's also kind of like a marketplace where people can sell components. Now, I don't think that it's very readable here, but there's quite a lot of packages, actually. And the nice thing is that you can look for packages just for a particular platform, or you can look for packages that are for cross-platform. And some of these are built, you know, as native libraries and then have a common API, or some of these are built, you know, as portable class libraries. But it's actually really handy to be able to look and see, hey, what is there available already? And there's quite a lot of things available. So if you start using this, I recommend going through the Xamarin Gallery because, like I said, there's quite a lot of goodness in there. Oh, and you're looking now at my notes. That's handy. Now, not that I'm afraid that you might read my notes, but it's... this is probably better. Shall we... You know what? Where is it? There we are. So back again. Okay. So suppose you've started building your first application with Xamarin Studio, a Hello World application. In my case, you know, we were building a nice application, and all of a sudden I got, you know, a call from one of my developers who said, this application is starting to become really big. Now, in this example, it's 15 megs. We ended up, you know, with a relatively simple application, and it was quickly up to 60, 70 megabytes, and we were not nearly done yet. So we were projecting, well, if we keep coding like this, it would be, you know, 100 or 200 megabytes for our application. Well, that's a bit big, especially if people want to download that application across the wire. So I started looking into it a little bit, and there's actually quite a good explanation on the Xamarin site of what goes on. And if you dive into what the packages look like, you can see that, you know, it's not a native application in the sense that, you know, you use only the features that are already available on the device, and you just, you know, you only deliver your own code. Now you have to ship Mono and, you know, and everything for .NET as well, right? Because there's just, in this case, it is, you know, a lot of additional code that you'll have to ship. And I found that, well, that's a lot of extra space that you're just shipping, even if you're building a 6KB Hello World application. Now, fortunately, and this was, you know, a big relief for me, is that when you do a release build, they do quite a lot of smart things with regards to linking, to shrink down the file size to, you know, only the bits that you're actually using. So they're stripping out everything else. So if you're not using XML, you don't get XML. If you're not using, you know, bitmap, for example, you don't include the bitmap. So it really shrinks it down to, quite usable file sizes. In the example for my application, which was 60 megs at the time, it shrunk it down to 15, which is pretty good decrease in file size. So it's still bigger than a native application, so that is something to take into account because, like I said, you are shipping with your application the Mono framework and the Mono library, and they're not going to be available on the platform itself. So, maybe when you're looking at this, by the way, one of the questions might arise, well, how do Android, or how does Xamarin Studio and native application development compare performance-wise? Well, it's a bit difficult because things are it's kind of comparing apples to oranges. But overall, native application performance is maybe only very, very slightly better than this. So it's actually you can get really good performance building applications this way. So that was another nice thing that if you want to get a lot of performance out of your application, you can definitely do that with Xamarin Studio. So let's look a little bit into one part of this, that's iOS development. And like I said, I don't have a Mac with me. And one of the things which the bastards at Apple did is that they will force you to only run and compile software on a Mac. There's no other way, right? Their license forbids you from running their compilers, their stuff on Windows or any other platform. So that kind of means that if you want to do this development, it's not just that you need the Xamarin licenses, you will also need an Apple hardware to compile against, which is a bit annoying. So when it comes to iOS development, well, what is particular about iOS development? You'll need Xcode as a development environment. Even if you're using Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio, you will also need Xcode. And Xcode is Apple's development studio. You can get it for free if you have an Apple developer account, which costs you 100 euros. So you can also think about it, you'll get it for 100 euros. But you'll need Xcode for at least the UI development and also for compiling. Natively, if you want to build native applications, you'll have to use Objective-C. And I'll show you a little bit about that in a minute. But one of the things which I really thought that was interesting about iOS development is that iPhones come with only a very limited set of form factors. If you think about one of the first iPhones, they came out with a set of dimensions. And when they started with the Retina, in order to support that, the reason probably why they wanted to go up to, twice as many pixels is that that's really easy to scale. They don't have, that much functionality for scaling images and scaling resources in their platform. So the only way that they could really pull that off is just to say, well, let's just double the amount of pixels, and then, if you don't code for it, just get a little bit fuzzier images. But if you're coding against iOS, you only have a very limited amount of form factors to worry about, which is really nice. It's really it's a lot different from what we'll see in Android. And I mentioned this before. The UIs are defined in Interface Builder Xcode, and we'll see what that looks like. And I've mentioned this, right? The code has to run on Apple hardware. So this is what Objective-C looks like. Now, who's coded in Objective-C before here? Oh, a couple people. Well, to me, the first time I saw Objective-C, it was like, what is that? I thought I could code, but what is this now all of a sudden? Because, I learned C in school and C++ and those kind of things, and then I looked at this, it's like, this is an alien foreign language. Well, they say that it's a superset of the C language, and, you can see some things like pointers and stuff in there, but it's, to me, it reads quite, difficult. And, this is a Xamarin presentation. Why am I talking about Objective-C? Well, if you're looking for samples, unfortunately, there are not that many samples online. I mean, if you think about, the developers who are coding now, I think, 99% of the developers are using just pure Xcode and Objective-C. So the examples that you will see will be in Objective-C, and you'll have to kind of, at least learn a little bit how to read those examples before you can translate it. Now, this is just an explanation. Okay, well, you know, this is what it actually is. You know, the decompiled or the explained version of what's happening. But yeah, the first couple times that I saw this, it was like, whoa, this is completely alien language to me. And that's actually one of the reasons why I'm happy that when I'm doing cross-platform development, I don't have to do this, you know, as my day job, so to speak, because it's just a horrible language. It really is. Next. Okay. So this is what Interface Builder looks like. And to be honest, it's not really, especially if you're used to Visual Studio, it's really not a nice development environment and a nice platform to work in. I mean, you will see some familiar things, right? You can drag and drop controls on your screen, and you can set properties on them. So that kind of is similar. But this is actually a relatively simplified, you know, view. If you start clicking things open, you will have, you know, lots of tabs and lots of things. But unfortunately, designing your UIs will definitely mean that you'll need Interface Builder, and you'll need a machine that runs Xcode. So that means an Apple device. Now, how would that work if you're in Xamarin Studio? And that's actually, you know, a reasonable approach. If you have Xamarin Studio installed on your Mac, and you also have Xcode installed on your Mac, you can create a view file, like that's what's... this is actually Xamarin Studio. But you select your view file on the left, you double-click it, it opens it up in Xcode, and that's where you can start defining your views. And then when you save it, it will save all the generated files back into your project, and you can start continue. But it's, I found this a little bit painful that Apple, you know, keeps their ecosystem so close that you'll have to do the UI development in their platform. So you'll define your views as zip files, XIB files. You can, like I said, you can use the things that we pretty much all know already. You know, you can drag controls on it, buttons, text boxes. They have controls like that. And to wire them up to what they call a controller, which is not that much of a, it's like code behind, so to speak, if you're used to Windows forms or web forms. It's not really, you know, controller in the MVC controller sense. You can wire that up using what they call actions and outlets. Now, in an action, basically, I kind of mix them always up in my mind. If I remember, actions are the things that one of them are events, the other are links to properties. I always mix them up in my head. Now, one of the things which is actually quite nice in iOS, I have to admit, is the storyboards approach. Because an application typically doesn't consist of a single screen. I mean, well, a relatively simple application might. But usually you have a kind of like a flow through your application. And storyboards will allow you to visually create the flow between different screens. Now, in a later part, we'll discuss, okay, well, if you're really doing cross-platform development, how useful is this? But it is quite nice that you can visually see in a development environment like this, if you click this button, it will go to that view. And if you click this button, you go to that view. And you're actually designing your views here. So this is not just designing one view. You're designing all of these views at the same time with controllers behind them, and you can see the transition between them. So it's definitely an interesting approach. Now, I mentioned before, you can code in Visual Studio. But I also mentioned that you need Apple hardware to run, and you need Apple hardware to design your interfaces, but especially to run and compile and deploy to a real phone. So Xamarin Studio did do something which is really nice in that regard, because obviously Visual Studio doesn't install on Mac hardware, is that you can connect to an Apple machine as a build server. And this is actually one of the things which I think is nice if you have multiple people working together, working in Visual Studio, and you don't want to have, don't want to give each person a Mac, because the nice thing then is that you can connect to your Xamarin Studio on Mac hardware and compile there from Visual Studio, so from Windows. And this screen kind of shows you, okay, how you can find them. To be honest, I have found this to be a little bit quirky. That sometimes, you know, it loses connection, and but it does work, and it's really nice to be able to work in Visual Studio in this way. Now, what about running your application? Well, if you run your application, even if, you know, this, you could get an emulator to work on. And the downside of using an emulator in this case is that the emulator that... Oh, yes, please. No. Unless you do it the hardcore way, which means, you know, instantiate a control, set the properties on it, and load it up. But that's code, right? Then you'll have to code up your UI. So other than that, no, which is a pain. Because this also kind of limits the usefulness of this approach, right? If you have five developers on your team and you just have one build server, but those five developers each need to design their own screens, all of them need the Apple hardware to design it. So, damn you, Apple. Anyway, I'm not the biggest fan of Apple, if you might have noticed. But, you know, they are the biggest player out there, and they, you know, they do build, you know, nice-looking hardware. So it's just reality. One of the things which I've also found, and, you know, it's also recommended, they have an iOS emulator. But as soon as you can, please, you know, develop your application on a real device. Because the iOS emulator really responds differently in lots of situations than the real hardware does. One example out of my head was that I believe that the file system on the emulator is not case sensitive, whereas the real device was case sensitive. So you can get interesting issues there if you think your application runs normally and then all of a sudden it's not running normally anymore when you deploy to a real real device. So, but this goes for all platforms. Please, by all means, you know, use real phones to test. It's just easier to test, and you know, it's much closer to reality. So let's dive a little bit more into, you know, the nuts and bolts, so to speak. iOS by default and Xcode, they don't use a garbage collector like we're used to, or they use something that's called automatic reference counting. Now, the nice thing about automatic reference counting as opposed to, you know, manual reference counting, which you had to do in COM, for example, is, you know, it will keep track of the references for you and dispose things whenever needed. But, the nice thing which I have found is that if you're using Xamarin Studio and C-sharp and .NET, so to speak, you get a real garbage collector. So all the techniques that you're used to, right, things... and all the traps that you can run into, for example, events. You always have to be careful with events because they might introduce memory leaks. They apply, right? So all the things, you know, iDisposable, you can call that. And it will just, you know, release objects as used to. And the reason why I'm calling out iDisposable on NSObject, NSObject is... the base class for object within iOS. And if you want to release the object that you're using, so it will release an in-memory thing that's controlled by iOS, you can just call dispose on it and it will be gone. So that's handy. And this is just some feature that you're used to if you're working in .NET. One thing that is recommended nowadays, and this is still a kind of an older screenshot, but there is a newer version of a garbage collector that's out. And here it still says experimental, but when I was looking it up, they're not saying that it's experimental anymore. But please enable this because it really does speed up the garbage collection process. So this is actually some new features in iOS which makes garbage collection a little bit easier, and Xamarin Studio can take care of that. So please remember to, if you're using this, just select that option. Okay. I'm going to show you a little bit about iOS development, but yeah, remember, I don't have a Mac hardware, so I can't show Interface Builder, I can't show that code. But let me just go over here, and I'll just do it this way. That's probably safer. So what you can see here is that I've opened up Visual Studio. And let's just assume that in Visual Studio I have created a user interface. So, in this case, I'm not even doing that. I'm doing it, you know, for the person who asked the question there. I'm doing it by hand in this example. So what you get if you want to start using iOS is you create a controller. That means driving your logic from UI View Controller. And in there, you can either get access to controls, which you've defined in your zip file, right? Text box, labels, those kind of things, and you can set properties on them. Or you can do it this way, right? Just create the controls, create the layout, and add them programmatically. So this really looks a lot like what you're used to with regards to Windows Forms, for example, if you're used to Windows Forms or web forms programming. So that is actually quite simple. One of the things which was a little bit of a trap for me is that there are all these events that iOS, or not events, all these methods like, well, you can see it here, view will appear, view will disappear, the did disappear, did view load. There are all these kind of overridable methods that you can implement. And in this example where I'm just showing one screen and one view, that's actually not that difficult. But as soon as you start doing collections, you'll see that you'll have to implement a lot of these base classes just to get these base class methods to get stuff to work. Now, the nice thing is that Xamarin Studio and the documentation for Xamarin Studio provides a lot of examples for this. So even though you can't really find many examples online, Xamarin Studio does provide with a lot of examples on how to build lists, how to build whatever. So I'm not going to go into that much. But you can see here I'm developing in Visual Studio here. And if I would have had Mac hardware here, I could just press F5. Select my build machine, and run and build on the Mac. All right. So let's dive a little bit into the other island, Android development. So if you think about Android development, if you do it natively, you'll have to use Eclipse as development environment and Java as a language. Who here knows Eclipse and Java? A couple people. Who likes it? Right. Okay. There's one hand there. Right. Yeah. I sound a bit negative, but Eclipse is not really my development environment of choice. I mean, I like Visual Studio and my ReSharper and those kind of things. So it's just really nice. I know some people who swear by Eclipse, but it's just not the. Yeah. I think from my perspective, I think we're spoiled with Visual Studio because it's such a nice environment. Who here has an iOS device? Oh, sorry, an Android device. Right. Quite a lot of people. How many different form factors do you think we have in this room? I think probably just equal amount of how many hands we have here. Right? Android devices come in all forms and shapes: small, big, tablets, all different form factors. And that poses a little bit of a challenge for Android development. I mean, the language is much simpler if you compare it to iOS, but the differences in the platform and the differences in the devices make it a little bit more difficult. Now, if you're used to WPF development or Silverlight or Windows Phone development, XAML. Well, Android has a version of that. They just put the X in the wrong place. They call it AXML. But other than that, if you know XAML, this is pretty similar, right? You can, of course, they have different controls and different things, but it is really similar. This is one of the statistics that I wanted to call out. I mentioned it a little bit earlier when you're talking about Android. I mean, there are still quite a lot of gingerbread phones, for example, out there. 17%. Ice cream sandwich and gingerbread together, that's a pretty big market share for phones that are, quite old. So, this is just a reality. I got this actually from the Apple, Android developer site, but it's you'll have to take into account when you're developing for this. Well, who am I going to target? Because obviously the APIs evolve and they're already up to, I think, version 19 of their platform support. So they evolve quite rapidly, but you'll just have to make sure that which version of the devices do you want to target. When it comes to the runtime, it's a bit different here than on iOS, and also a bit different here than what you're used to in .NET, because Java uses its own virtual machine, the Dalvik virtual machine. And obviously, we also have Mono, and Android apparently uses a Linux kernel underneath. So if you start just only use for a lot of code your native .NET stuff, native .NET libraries. It runs in the mono virtual machine that you're used to, and everything .NET applies there, right? The garbage collection and those kind of things. However, if you start interacting with things really native to Android, even if it's just, you know, the Android bitmap, for example, or the you know, other Java objects, they will live inside of the Dalvik virtual machine. Now, do you see that when you're coding? No, not really. But it is something to keep in mind. And why am I calling this out? Well, one of the things that you can really run into is, what if you load up a 10 megabyte image in Android, right? It's an Android object, a Java object, lives in the Dalvik virtual machine, and you have a reference from that from your .NET application. Well, obviously, you can show it, you can manipulate it, you can do whatever you want with it in your .NET application, and all is nice. And you release the reference, and you expect it to be released, right? Because that's what garbage collection is supposed to do. Well, if there's not that much memory pressure that .NET can detect, garbage collector won't kick in. And even though there might be a lot of memory pressure because it's all in the Dalvik virtual machine, it might not be that Mono knows about that. And there's not really a way, like in .NET, that you can, you know, simulate the fact that there's memory pressure so that you kick off the garbage collector. So if you know that you have large objects in the Java runtime and you've just released them and you want to make sure that they actually get released, well, just give the garbage collector a kick. Now, usually in, you know, a regular .NET application, if you see somebody calling GC collect, 9 out of 10 times they're doing something wrong, because in .NET, you know, you really, if you're coding properly, you really don't have a reason to call garbage collector. In Android, that's not the case. So if you know something that you have a lot of memory that you're using and trying to free in Java, you know, feel free to just kick the garbage collector. So let me show you a little bit about Xamarin Android. And the nice thing about Xamarin Android is that we can actually demo it and run it here because, hey, I have a Windows machine here, and that will run just fine. So let me open up Xamarin Studio here and move it over here. So it's a bit smallish, but I think, yeah, I did increase the size of the code here. So this is a very simple example, and let me just run it and show you what you're going to be experiencing. When you install the Xamarin Studio, which then will trigger installing the Android SDK, you will get all these device emulators. And it's a bit difficult for me to read here, but let me just start up the... as soon as you start installing newer and newer versions of the platform, and as I mentioned, they're already up to version 19, but in this case, I'm using still a little bit older one. You will see that I'm starting it up now, and it's rather slow. Now they actually know that it's slow. I mean, if you do it in Visual Studio, it will warn you, saying, "Are you sure you want to compile or deploy to an emulator because it's so slow?" Now, fortunately, another thing which they came up with with Google came up with is also an emulator that will run natively on an x68 processor. So this is now an emulated processor, and that makes it really slow, but you can run it basically on your own real processor, and that's faster. But unfortunately, I've never been able to get this to work on my machine. So probably something wrong with my machine. I really hear good performance improvements, but the best performance, again, is just try it out on a real physical device. And the nice thing about real physical device with Android is that it's really easy to set up. So it's all in the manuals how to set it up, but yeah. So I've started up the virtual machine, and I can now select it, and it will deploy it to it. And that will take a little bit of time. And there it is. Now, this sample reads out all the contacts. And as I don't have any contacts on... Oh, I created a contact form yesterday. I didn't have a contact, so I created one. And it will just read out the contacts and show it on screen with an image there. So it's a really simple demo. But It will show a little bit about, okay, how can you code in Xamarin Studio? I could have done this also in Visual Studio, but you know, then I don't have a reason to show Xamarin Studio anymore. So you can, in Visual Studio, you can pretty much do exactly the same thing as you can do here, right? Just deploy, run everything that you might need. So how does this work? Well, in Android, you don't get a controller. You get what they call an activity. So an activity, again, is pretty much like what you know in Windows Forms or Web Forms. It's kind of like your code behind. And one of the nicer things is that, well, your UI in this case is defined in a resource file, in one of those AXML files, and you can load the resource file into your view, and into your activity, and from that point on, it will instantiate all the controls, and you're good to go, and then you can get them. What it doesn't do for you is, like in Visual Studio, we're all used to, if you drag a control onto your, the, your surface, it will create a private property for you. Android doesn't do that for you, but it will create a resource ID. So if you call the control, you know, the what do we have here? The contacts list view, which is a list view control. It won't create it create a property for you, but it will create the resource ID, which you can then use to find the view, and then from then on you can interact with it. So this is, you know, a little bit of a nuisance, but you know, you'll get over it. And from that point on, you can start coding against it. Right now, it's a list view. So what you're doing is in the list view, you're loading up data into it. And the way that you load up data in this case is using an adapter. Well, all of this is explained in depth in the samples. I can, like I said, I'd love to dive into this a little bit more deeply, but you know, then you would probably have to do an entire, you know, Android session or iOS session, and we want to focus more on cross-platform things. One thing I can show here, just because we can and we couldn't in iOS, is the interface builder. This also works in Visual Studio, by the way, which is nice. I'm just now showing it in Android. But you can load up your AXML files and you get a visual designer. In this case, it doesn't really do that much, but I could have just, you know, drag and dropped buttons in here and put it there and start interacting with it and playing with it. So this is a little bit, you know, from my perspective, it's a little bit easier to work with. And, well, yeah, it's actually, you know, once you get used to it, it's actually quite a nice development experience. So let's get back to the coding. So now let's go into a little bit more the what I think is the interesting area, because, yeah, like I said, I mean, each platform on its own has its own, you know, strengths and weaknesses, so to speak. But yeah, most of the time, if a customer asks you, hey, I want to build an app, they're not saying I want to build just an iOS app. They probably want to do hit multiple platforms. So that's what we're going to look at right now. Most people know, you know, an image like this. Right, it's a layered design that hopefully we're all a little bit familiar with, right? You should factor in your UI, you should separate it from your business logic, and you should separate it from your data access logic. And the same applies in this case to when you're building a mobile application, right? Because if you're thinking about a mobile application, the application has UI, the application has logic, you know, what happens when you click a certain button, what do you need to do, you know, validation rules that you might want to kick off within the device itself. And most applications also have some form of data access. Well, you can use databases on the device itself, like SQLite and those kind of things, or you can access external services. It doesn't really matter. It's pretty much the same as you would do in any application. So those same rules apply here. Now, if you're talking about code reuse, and that's why I kind of used different colors here, what is easy to reuse? Well, we've already seen that the real UI is, you know, pretty much unshareable. Unless, again, you're building a game and you're only doing user-drawn graphics. But each platform has their own way of defining user interfaces. So there's no way around that, right? UI logic, well, kind of depends, right? Your code behind, you'll still interact with your UI in a certain way, so that's probably a little bit difficult, although we'll talk about that a little bit more in at the end of the presentation. Business logic is something that you would definitely want to share, right? What happens if, how will I validate a customer? How will I validate something? Well, that's definitely something that you want to share. And all the interaction with back-end services, local databases, and those kind of things, well, you can very easily build them platform independent. I've put data contracts on the left because I really think that data contracts can very easily be shared, between client, server, and all the different devices. So that's why it's there. And if you build your abstractions properly, you can probably do the diagnostics and authentication the same way. So let's talk a little bit about code sharing techniques. First, let's look into what can you do to do code sharing. Well, you can create linked files, and we're going to talk about that. Yeah, this pretty much basically the main approaches are linked files and portable class libraries, and I'm talking about them in the opposite order, so that's useful. Portable class libraries are an interesting area. When I first heard about it, well, why didn't we have this before, right? Well, in the beginning, portable class libraries were possible, but they were only allowed on Windows platforms. There was just the Microsoft license didn't allow you to do this on any other platform. Well, that kind of limits your uses for this on a mobile device. But yeah, Microsoft fortunately opened up their eyes and they figured, well, let's at least make it from a license perspective, make it easier. And they also helped Xamarin Studio a little bit with Xamarin to be able to use this for Xamarin Studio as well. So the nice thing about it is that, the complicated thing is with portable class libraries is that you'll have to pick what am I going to target. Because even though both .NET and Silverlight, Windows phones, and all those platforms use the base class library from .NET, they use different aspects of it. And some of them actually have different implementations for certain things and different capabilities. So depending on what you pick here, you will get more or less functionality. But it also kind of limits you with regards to what you can do with your library. So portable class libraries is a great way to start sharing code between your applications because you're actually creating a DLL and that DLL will run on your iOS device and Android device and on your Windows phone and whatever. But it's not as simple as just, I'll just put some reusable code in a class and it will all just work quite nicely. Right? There is quite a lot of issues that you might run into. And one of them is actually which I ran into is that Xamarin Studio, at least the version that I'm running, and I think I'm running the latest version, still has issues with .NET 4.5 portable class libraries. Is it not supported? Well, it is supported, strangely enough, by the platforms. But Xamarin Studio does have issues. So what I did was I created just my portable class libraries and opened up the project files and just in the project files added references to my PCLs because the UI didn't allow me to select the PCLs for some for some reason. But so you can use them, and actually, once you do and if you get across a little bit of issues with versioning between different platforms, it's actually a nice way to share code. Another way is to use linked files, and I have here an example of what a linked file might be. Linked files basically mean that you'll have the same one file which sits in one physical location and you'll link it in several locations. For Visual Studio 2010, there's actually a class linker library that was originally used to share code between Silverlight and real .NET applications. I don't think it's actually ported all the way up to Visual Studio 2013, but it kind of did the same thing. It kind of tried to automate things a little bit. Adding a linked file is a little bit hidden. It's not even in this link, but if you wanna see how you add a linked file in Visual Studio, for example, if you click here, I'm saying add a new item. No, not add a new item. That would definitely not create a linked item. Add existing item, and doesn't matter which file I click. If you just click add here, it will always create a copy, even though it might be somewhere else. It will create a copy of your file. So there's the little option here of add as link, and then it will make your file, as if it's in your project, physically at that location, but it's not. Note, if you're using this technique for files that really have to be physically at the location, for example, config files, web.config files, those kind of things, which obviously, you know, in Xamarin Studio, that's not the case, but you'll need to do other tricks to get that to work. But in this case, it's actually quite a handy approach to have one file that you want to use and share code between various projects, even if there are, you know, if the projects themselves target completely different you know, versions of .NET or so let's go back here. Another thing which you can do to you know, differentiate code between different platforms, because, well, you know, iOS and Android will have, you know, different ways of interacting with certain things, is to use partial classes. And that is actually a really handy interaction between partial classes here and linked files, because you can have a file that's linked in a central location that has all your general logic, and then you'll have partial classes that sit in the platform-specific location that will contain, you know, the code that you might want to differentiate between two different platforms. So this works really, really nice. Another way what you can easily do is implement a template method pattern. Who knows what this pattern is? Only one hand. What if I say it's just using inheritance? Then it's a lot simpler, right? Template method basically means I have a base class that has all my generalized logic. For example, if you want to read the context, right, you have some logic that handles context in your way, but you have one method that says, now get the context from my phone. Well, obviously, that's going to be different in Android and iOS. So then you can use you have the generalized base class, and then you have an iOS version of your class and an Android version of your class. So that is just a simple way of getting around that. But my personal favorite technique is to factor things into services and use dependency injection. Again, who uses dependency injection here? Quite a lot of hands. Okay, so in general, dependency injection is really not that difficult technique. Basically, what you're doing here, and can I zoom in Notepad? No, I can't. So let me just switch to Visual Studio then. So this is just a very simple example. You know, at some point, you will say at some location, well, let me just do a public class. You'll have, shouldn't have done the slash. Hey. Oh yeah, class is not with, not like this. I'll call this class example. You might have an interface that you want to have, you know, the public void I person, or can't, right? This is a class that defines, okay, not a void, not really awake at the time, sorry. You have an interface, you know, the context store, you'll define, okay, how do you get your context from your machine? You can have a class that says, you know, public class Android contact store, which implements iContact store contact. Right, and you'll implement methods here that explicitly say, well, this is how you do certain things in Android. And then in your example class, you would like to use that. Well, one of the techniques you can use is what we call instructor injection. So you just have a constructor, and you say, hey, I want an iContact store. Right? And then somewhere, right, typically in your iOS application or your Android application, you will start making links between, okay, for an iOS application, whenever somebody asks for an iContact store, give him the Android context store, because the Android application is setting up these type mappings. I personally use AutoFac in this case. AutoFac is a dependency injection container that that has a platform, a PCL, actually. So it works really well. I would have liked to use Unity, because that's what I typically use, but unfortunately, Unity is not available on this platform. So But yeah, this is just a really simple, or not a simple, but it's a really effective way of factoring out certain things. And one of the things, the reason why I like it, is it also provides a nice separation of concerns. So it not only forces you to, you know, create classes that only do one thing, you know, comply to the solid principles, but then also, you know, you factor out things between different platforms. So that works out really well. Now, you don't have to do this all on your own. One of the things which Xamarin Studio is really keen on is their core platform doesn't supply abstractions, right? Their only abstraction is the .NET framework that you can code against, or the Mono framework. But they try to expose everything that's available in the core, in the underlying platforms. But that doesn't mean that, you know, if you want to do something with context, by default, it's going to be different in iOS than in Android, right? Fortunately, there are already quite a lot of, you know, ready-made abstractions that you can use. RestSharp, for example. Now, why am I calling out RestSharp here? Because the .NET framework and Mono does have an implementation to do web calls on different platforms. I found out that the version for iOS is really inefficient. So, and RestSharp is not only provides a lot of extra features, but it's also not so inefficient to use on iOS. So RestSharp is one example to do to web calls that I really recommend. And I found Xamarin.mobile, which has a lot of, this is actually a package that's provided by Xamarin Studio separately. You can get it from the gallery as well. Provides common logic, such as getting contacts, media, right? They give me all the photos that are on your device, those kind of things. So if you need that functionality, you know, it's there already. And the last one that I'd like to talk about is a library that's called MVVM Cross. Who knows what a view model is or the MVVM pattern? Right? Quite a lot of people, not everybody. A view model is basically a class that typically implements iNotify property change, or it has a mechanism to notify views that something's going on. And it's really a logical representation of everything that's on your view. So if you have a text box on your view, likely that the text value from that property is directly bound to something in your view model. If you have a button on your view and you want to click the button, that the thing that you want to trigger is likely a method on your view model. So, and MVVM Cross started out, and now they're doing quite a lot more actually, but it started out initially as just providing a platform that will allow you to do data binding across different different versions or different platforms. And this is something that really amazes me, is that neither iOS or Android has a native version, a native implementation to do data binding. And to be honest, you know, seven years ago, we were all still doing, you know, textbox.txt equals, you know, my business object.txt. And there were all these issues that you got there with manual data binding. And, you know, MVC came out. They did automatic data binding. You know, XAML came out. And, you know, Google has, you know, with Angular, thank you. I'm actually having a presentation about Angular, so it's nice that I couldn't remember the name. But they do all these things with data binding, and I'm amazed that the core platforms like iOS and Android don't do data binding. Well, with MVVM Cross, you can. And it's really, really nice. So this allows you to share a lot of your UI logic as well. You don't have to do all the manipulation of, you know, textbox.txt equals this and interact directly with your controls. So that's great. But then the question is, do you really want to? Now, why am I asking this? Well, if you start building your view models out this way, and it's powerful, but you'll get pretty much the same application, maybe styled a little bit differently, across your various applications, various platforms. So the reason why I'm saying, do you really want to, is that, you know, the Windows Phone, for example, has quite different layout standards than iOS. And Android, again, has their own ways of doing stuff with user interfaces. So if you really want to build exactly the same application for Android, iOS, and WinPhone, then this is a really great approach. If you want to take advantage of, you know, the different UI paradigms that you that you have on the different platforms. And Metro style is a really good application, right? The horizontal scrolling, that's really something that's specific to Windows Phone. And you know, Android users or iOS users won't expect that. Well, the buttons underneath, right, in iOS to select different tabs, that's really an iOS thing. Android has, you know, a top bar with some navigations on there. So they have different UI paradigms. And if you use this approach, one of the risks is that you'll have to, is that you will get exactly the same application on your different platforms. So I mean, I'm starting to run a little bit out of time. When you're talking about, you know, building cross-platform applications, there are various options. And I think, honestly, right now, Xamarin Studio is a really valid option. Right? If you want to code a cross-platform application and you know C Sharp, right, that is probably the way to go. If you're working in an organization that already has, you know, Java developers or Objective-C developers, you know, that's probably going to be the way to go because, well, all the samples that you can find, or 90% of the samples out there and the examples, are going to be in the native languages. So they'll be more effective rather than just switching over to C Sharp. But if you know C Sharp, well, this is a really good way to go. But unfortunately, I think still the learning curve is quite steep because, you know, you will still need to know everything about the platforms that you're building for. Right? There is no abstraction for how you build a view in iOS, or there is no abstraction for building, you know, controls or using controls in Android. You will need to know everything still about those particular platforms. So it's not just something, well, hey, I'm using C Sharp, I'll just have a running start. Unfortunately, no. But yeah, it's definitely doable, and it's you know, it's quite fun. So, well, that was my presentation on Xamarin Studio. I mean, if you have questions, you know, feel free. If not, well, thank you very much for your attention. And please remember to fill out the survey, because that's really nice. Questions? No? All right.